Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 56, section 2, which is old single column, page 638. All right, so you recall from last session, we got started on this final paper in part two. Remember these final two papers are a block on universal coordination. And we were, seeing that being expressed very directly now that we're in the paper entitled Universal Unity. And they were speaking a lot to the fact that the kind of unity we're talking about when they say universal unity is not a unity that is necessarily automatically inherently there to begin with, but the unity that results from coordination. But remember how they were definitely leveraging off of your recognition of a very inherent unity in the first source and center. That they're doing like they always do. They're trying to use what they've revealed about the seven absolutes of infinity in an effort to prime some recognition, to go beyond that, and to fundamentally appreciate where that coordination comes from. It doesn't come from any one of the seven absolutes or all seven of them together. The coordination comes from the Paradise Trinity and the mother deity that stems from it. And, we saw them speaking, again, directly to that. And you see the first section entitled Physical Coordination. So you start with the individuality of the physical. You're immediately thinking about an association amongst all of that individuality. But it's not merely associativity. Not merely those associations, but a systemizing of those associations. It's a coordination. And the resultant unified phenomenon that physical part of the entire system participates in, when all is said and done, of a threefold actuality with unity. Where again, by that unity, you mean the tri-unity that is the result of that coordinating influence, that is the coordination. So they're expecting that you've got all of that in mind. All of that, remember how much they were trying to leverage off of how pure energy and pure spirit are one and the same fact. In the context of the first source and center, and they were getting you to reflect on that together as oneness and how that supplies the potentiality for a subsequent harmony. Once you actually do have the separation into the threefold actuality, it has an inherent potentiality to be harmonized, to be coordinated into a tri-unity. From that perspective, from that seven absolutes of infinity perspective, because in that perspective, after all, it started with a first source and center in which there is no separation. And remember how it ended there in that section one. They were using that monothetic expression that's used one other time in linkage to the I Am, and they were reminding you of that root nature of the Father in relationship to that concept, that initial concept of the I Am. It's monothetic. It's singular doingness. It's monothetic nature. It's not dithetic, right? Energy and spirit. It's monothetic in that first source and center. You'll see they'll come back to that again in here in section three. But before we get to section three, we've got section two. And, you see something kind of interesting. So you started with physical coordination. You can look ahead and you can see spiritual unification, personality unification. So you're thinking a process, you know, moving towards unity in some way. But with the mind, it's just right there. It's not intellectual unification, it's intellectual unity. Because as a simple energy fact, you've got these three energies. You've got the energy of individuality, physical energy, and you have the energy of, you know, inherent unity, spirit energy, and then you have a super additive consequence of the relationship between those two, you know, which embodies associativity. So you have that threefold actuality of individuality, associativity, unity. But subsequent to that, you have an encompassment through personalized mind of that threefold actuality. And mind is not just merely that associativity. It is the context in which that unity exists then, that subsequent tri-unity, unity. And like you often hear me say, you know, think about the super additive consequence of mind and then it encompassing the three. You know, not just being a third point, but then subsequently an encompassing fact. You know, just like with philosophy, initially it's just that super additive consequence, but then there's the full encompassment, the wholeness of using philosophy in that greater sense. Yeah, using mind in that full sense. Here again, intellectual unity. So you'll see they bring that out, and I'll point out here in a little bit how they're paralleling something that's up quite a ways in the book in this section here. So let's just jump in, and I'll explain what I mean there. But again, look for how they are. They're trying to start you with the seven absolutes of infinity, getting you to reflect on that, leveraging off of that to try to get you beyond that starting point to the greater recognition. All right.
Two, intellectual unity. The thought father realizes spirit expression in the word son and attains reality expression through paradise. Expansion, excuse me, through paradise in the far-flung material universes. The spiritual expression of the eternal Son, or expressions of the eternal Son, are correlated with the material levels of creation by the functions of the infinite spirit, by whose spirit-responsive ministry of mind, and in whose physical directive acts of mind, the spiritual realities of deity and the material repercussions of deity are correlated the one with the other.
So you just notice at the end there how they're you know, indicating what I was just talking about. I mean, you start out just thinking of, you have this twofold fact, but it comes together in the context of mind. I mean, for instance, with you. You don't have any direct relationship to matter or spirit substance. All you have conscious access to is the representations of those two substances in your mind. And you see, it's within the context of mind that the three come together. You know, it's not like you're literally melting the three energies together, right? The three energies are absolutely separated. Each of them goes back to an absolute anchor. They can't melt together. You know, so this coordination, the context for the three to come together as one is within the wholeness of mind. You know, that's where this triunity, this intellectual unity, is going to be.
Seems natural to us, though, right?
It does. However. You know, commonly you think, like if I reach over here and run my hand across the arm of this couch, you think that your hand is feeling the arm of the couch.
In one way.
No. I mean, you know, if I run, if I pick up this cup and I run it over the arm of the couch, do I say that the cup is feeling the arm of the couch? No. Why don't I say that, you know, it's doing the same thing that my hand was doing. Why don't I say that, the cup feels the arm of the couch? Because, you know, matter doesn't feel anything. The matter of your hand doesn't matter how many nerves it has or anything. Your hand doesn't feel anything. It's just a, just matter. Only your mind feels. Right? There's stimulation being conveyed up nerves to your brain, and then there's that very mysterious process of transferring the stimulated brain into a representation in the mind, and then that mind feels something. Your brain doesn't feel anything either. Your brain is just matter. It doesn't feel anything. Right? It's the same way, you know, with spirit. That, you know, like say you're a jester. I mean, you don't have any direct access to the adjuster anymore than you have direct access to the matter of the arm of this couch. Right? All you have access to is the representation in your mind. You know, you need to remind yourself of that so that you don't start thinking you have some sort of perfect engagement. It's like, I mean, all I have access to is a representation of the adjuster in my mind. Well, what if I haven't supplied the favorable conditions in my mind for an adjuster to be well represented in my mind energy? Then all I'm going to get is that poor representation. Right? Doesn't matter how much I want a better representation, my mind doesn't allow a better representation of an adjuster. Right? And if my mind is fundamentally predicated on me, when that adjuster is represented in a mind like that, all I'll get is a glorification of me from that adjuster. Yeah. It's limited to the favorable conditions or not so favorable in my mind. We all know that how that basically works with matter. You know, if you don't have favorable conditions, you don't see colors properly. Or whatever. You know, and you definitely know if I snip the nerves in my arm and I could run my hand over the over this couch arm, you know, until I'm blue in the face, I wouldn't feel anything. Right? It's very important to appreciate that you know what they're you know getting at between the lines here.
So all beings must be minded.
Yeah, yeah.
All of it, no matter what.
Everything has to be minded or there's no awareness, right? And it's all awareness is in the mind. You know, it doesn't matter how spiritual the being is, they still only relate to a representation of spirit substance in their mind.
And is there plant mindedness?
Yeah, there's plants are minded with mechanical mind.
I see. Okay.
So they don't have consciousness, but they're minded. Because it requires differential, like a single-celled animal has the first adjutant, and so there's a differential, a vertical differential between the first adjutant and mechanical mind below it. So, from that perspective of that first adjutant, there can be a consciousness of the mind activity of the mechanical mind.
The rock's not.
No, rock is not minded, right? And a rock can't be minded because the rock is not animate. It doesn't have life animation added to it first, you know, and then you can add mechanical mind to that, you know, living matter, right? But you know, you always have this differential. You can't be directly aware of your point of observation. You can only be aware of what's below that. So if you have three adjutants, you know, that mind can be aware of, you know, what's below it, the two adjutants and the mechanical mind below it, but, you know, you're a drop of water in the ocean of the third adjutant vantage point above. You know, so the only way to get awareness of your full mindal self as a human, all seven adjutants, is to have some vantage point above all seven adjutants.
So paradise is not minded.
Yeah, the paradise is not minded, no.
Okay.
Right. But But anyway, you know, got off track there. But just appreciate that the mind is as a phenomenon. See, that has, it's much more than just this third energy. It also supplies the means for this separation to be brought back together again. And did you still have a question you wanted to bring up, or did it get answered already?
It wasn't a question.
Oh, okay. All right.
But no, it's the timing's now.
Okay, I'm sorry. You got something on the webinar?
Yeah, I think Winston wants clarification that the having to do with representation in mind, and that all beings have mind, and that what are the advantages and disadvantages of the fact that everything is a representation in mind, regardless of who you are.
Well, the disadvantage is you're subject to the limitations of the representation, right? Limited mind can only represent in a limited way. But the advantage is when personality is identified with that mindal self, it gives you full creativity potential. Right? You're sovereign in that domain, and you can... you can establish as perfect a harmonization of the threefold actuality as you can without any limitation. No amount of exercise of my free will is going to change the physics of that table. Okay. But the representation in my mind is subject to my manipulation, obviously for good or for ill. It's a double-edged sword, right? Once you separate it from its absolute anchor in the Isle of Paradise, or the absolute anchor for spirit substance in the eternal sun. But that, that's the whole point. You need to have a space where you can have free will exercised. Free will. And you also, there needs to be a place where harmony can be realized. Like I said, you're not going to literally melt the three energies back together again. Right? So there has to be a place where harmony can manifest.
I have one more stupid
question. Okay, all right.
So I'm reading the first part of it. So is the infinite spirit the mind of God?
Okay, yeah. So let's get into the details here a little bit. So they're drawing upon that thought, word, action sequence, you can see. So I'll get to your question in just a second, but let's just step through it. Okay, so notice the first thing they do is, it's not just that, but they say on the one hand you have thought going to word, so you have the spirit side, and on the other side you've got the Isle of Paradise, parallel to the eternal sun, and the thought father realizes spirit expression in the word son, and it specifically that relationship is the relationship between the universal father and the eternal son. When they go and attains reality expansion through paradise, okay, now technically we're not talking about the universal father there, we're talking about the first source and center as the universal controller relating to the Isle of Paradise. And there's actually a little specificity of verbiage there suggesting that. The word expansion is not random there. That's actually referring to the facet of deity that is the universal controller, so that when you think of the individual, you're thinking about the individual expressing the functioning of that facet of deity in the Father, in relating to the Isle of Paradise. So that's a technical term there for them to say expansion. For those of you who have taken Total Deity, you might know what I'm talking about. We don't need to go into the details. But see, they're just indicating that. And then they say, the spiritual expressions of the Eternal Son are correlated with the material levels of creation by the functions of the Infinite Spirit, by whose spirit-responsive ministry of mind, etc. Initially when you're just thinking about the seven absolutes, you have the absolute of matter on the one hand, the Isle of Paradise. You have the absolute of spirit, or the capital A absolute, capital S spirit, another name for the Eternal Son. You have those two absolutes of those two substances. And then you have this super additive consequence of the absolute mind, capital A, capital M, another name for the conjoint actor, that third person. Okay. On the one hand, you have that, but you notice they didn't say conjoint actor. Remember, they were doing the same thing. Remember how this started out when they talked about by one infinite mind up there in the second sentence or the third sentence of this whole paper, at the beginning of the preface there. Remember how they were moving much more towards the infinite mother spirit as the infinite mind. And that's what they're getting at there. Right? They're not at the point where they're literally saying the infinite mother spirit. But that's why they're using the infinite spirit there. By the functions of the infinite mother spirit, and as the infinite mother spirit is the infinite mind, capital I, capital M. And that's a reservoir for mind activity. Not mind energy, that's the universal absolute, but mind activity. See how they're talking about the functions, right? Suggestive of the activity. This correlation is by the functions of the Infinite Spirit, by whose spirit-responsive ministry of mind, and in whose physical directive acts of mind. So they're giving you that. The normal way we think of a hierarchy where spirit dominates mind and mind dominates matter, right? So you've got the spirit responsive ministry of mind, and then mind dominates matter, whose physical directive acts of mind. So that's one way, they're starting you with that simple kind of hierarchical picture of seeing how you've got the three together in a system, spirit over mind over matter. But then they get more direct, and say the spiritual realities of deity and the material repercussions of deity are correlated the one with the other. So there he is much more thinking about, how you have the two representations within the domain of mind, and they're coming together in a triunity. Is correlated the one with the other. Okay, so then they're going to go and get a little bit more specific, notice how just like before they're not directly talking about the Paradise Trinity or Mother Deity, but they're trying to motivate you there. So let's see where they go next here.
My question.
Yeah. Oh, wait. What was your question again? Sorry.
It's okay. I did the same thing. My question was, is the infinite spirit the mind of God?
Okay, in terms of mind as we think of it, you want to think of the third person, the absolute mind, as being the mind of God. Mind as you understand it, there's where the mind is. Just like you want, in terms of spirit, you don't want to think of the first person as the Spirit of God. You want to think of the second person as the Spirit of God, right? I mean, that's that's the absolute spirit. That's that absolute expression of spirit fact, just like the third person is the absolute expression of mind fact, right? So, you can think of expressing spirit in a pure and direct way and expressing mind in a pure and direct way, those have both been delegated. Right? They're not resident in the first source and center. Those facts have been delegated. Just like the first person is not the personality absolute. Second person is. That's been delegated. And that has to be. If he didn't delegate that, there wouldn't be anything except God the Infinite. There wouldn't be first person, second person, third person, galaxies, Chris, John, couches, nothing. You know, nothing. It would just be God the Infinite if he didn't delegate that personality of infinity to the second person. But as you got, you know, everything that can be delegated is delegated. And soon you missed, you know, when you were here last time, they brought up that fact that the moment that you bring in mind, you know you've moved away from the first source and center. Because mind only exists apart from the first source and center.
But he must have a mind.
No? Right, but it's not anything like we understand. You know, it's the mindedness of deity. It's inherent within. It's not the kind of mind that's a super additive consequence across that differential, because there is no differential within him. Right? For there to be that super additive consequence. Right, yeah. So
hard to for us to understand.
Right. It's a very, you know, innate sort of a mindedness, rather than the way we think about it. Same is true of the second person. I mean, there's no differential there either. It's all one side of the, you know, of the equation. Right? So that's a very internal. And the best way, Steve, to think about the mindedness of the Father and the Son is to get out of the individuality viewpoint, to go to the deity viewpoint. Deity is innately minded. And then there's no issue. I mean, then you're just sort of recognizing they're all minded because they're all deity.
Okay. Right. But they're all individual personalizations of deity.
Right. In the individuality viewpoint, you know, like the Revelators point out with the first and second persons, you know, talking, you know, obviously they have to be minded, but you got to recognize from that perspective they're not minded in any way that you're immediately thinking, because they're not, you know, there's no differential.
They don't all share one mind.
No.
And a creator son has his own.
No,
mind.
Right. Again, they're separate mindal selves. You know, same way your thought adjuster is a separate mindal self. From the universal father, from you, from your Marantia self, you know. Right. I mean, there's all the, you know, there's countless numbers of separate mindal selves. But again, when you're talking about mindal selves, those aren't literally broken off. You know, mind ministry is ubiquitous. You know, and they're the, you know, a mindal self is always a quasi-localization. Right? The mind energy that my mindal self is using is continuously connected to all of your mindal selves. Right? I'm just quasi-localized in my use of the mind energy so that we're not overlapping.
And right? Same with deity. I mean,
and deity's the same way. Right, you know, deity isn't literally broken into chunks.
So that's how a divine counselor can figure out what's in all the people's minds, because it's
right. I mean, it's theoretically everything is accessible, right? I mean, there's no gap to bridge.
Interesting.
You know, it's all within one energy system, right? You know, and there's both the horizontal accessing in that system and the vertical accessing. You know, because you know, mind isn't just ubiquitous on a given plane of the cosmos. It's also, you know, fully ubiquitous vertically, from the infinite mind all the way down to plants, down to your lawn, right? Yeah. Right?
Don't cut me.
They're not conscious. Okay. So anyway. Okay, so let's see where they go next here.
Mind is the functional endowment of the infinite spirit, therefore infinite in potential and universal in bestowal. The primal thought of the universal Father eternalizes in dual expression, the Isle of Paradise and his deity equal, the spiritual and eternal Son. Such duality of eternal reality renders the mind of God, the infinite spirit, inevitable. Mind is the indispensable channel of communication between spiritual and material realities. The material evolutionary creature can conceive and comprehend the indwelling spirit only by the ministry of mind.
See how I was jumping ahead. I mean, I knew that they were getting there, but I wanted to just prime that. See, so they're reminding you that, like I stressed at the beginning, that you know, there's no way to take a hold of it or wrap your mind around it. Conceive means to take together, and comprehend means wrap around it. Okay, so, you know, you have no way to take a hold of or wrap your mind around the fact of the adjuster directly, right? All you have is a representation of that fact in your mind to take a hold of and wrap a comprehension around, right?
When I attempt to talk to God or talk to my adjuster in whatever state, prayer or just in conversation, or share the inner life with God, is that a mind-to-mind thing?
You're attempting to, I mean, you know, the way to think about it is, I mean, you're attempting to put a form in your mind that then can be transferred in some representation, you know, like say bias, you know, if you're thinking about some conduit via the adjuster or whatnot, or, I mean, you know, this is why, you know, when they talk about, you know, if you want to get, say, a prayer to God, it has to be something, it has to be a form in your mind that can be transferred into a representation that can travel through the wires, right, as it were, to where you want it to go. In the same way that the adjuster can only be represented in your mind to the limit that your mind can represent something high, it works the same way the other way. You know, like if I'm going to try to get something to the adjuster, I mean, it has to be something that has some adjuster likeness, right, that can be represented within the mind of the adjuster. You know, I can't just get anything. An ant can't form something in its mind that can be transferred into the mind of an adjuster. You know, neither can a dog, right, or an elephant. Right? They have no way to put a form in their mind that can be represented in the mind of the adjuster. You've got to make something that's adjuster-like in your mind so that it can be represented in the mind of the adjuster. The adjuster has no way to be aware of it. See, so again, you know, that's why, you know, the adjuster doesn't exist in the lower domain of the hourglass analogy of your mind. It only exists in the upper domain because it's only in the upper domain that there's even potentially something that, you know, that could be represented within its mind, you know, that it could have some relationship to. Otherwise, everything else is effectively invisible, you know, insensible to the adjuster. You know, in the same way that you can't see spirit substance, doesn't mean that there isn't spirit substance out in front of you here. There is. But you have no way to represent that in your mind. Right? You got to have a mind, you know, that can actually represent that substance. When you have Marantia mind, you have a mind that can represent that substance, and you'll see it then. But right now, your mind can't. You know, so again, the fact that you can't see spirit substance, so just how much can you actually get from the adjuster right now? If you think of it as a spirit fragment, how much of it is really representable in your mind right now? Mm-hmm. see, the only way, you know, if you get all the way to a first circler, okay, you're starting to have a Marantia-like mind. And the adjuster actually it can be more directly represented in your mind, right? And you begin to hear it, right? Just like you would begin to see spirit substance in the external world. Yep.
Now, our soul is a Marantia entity.
Right.
Thusly, the more capacity that soul has, the more potential the communication with an adjuster.
Right, so your soul, you know, I was just talking about my adjutant mindal self. Your soul, that's a separate self.
Correct.
That's a Marantia self. It has Marantia mind seated on that soul. There's a separate self there.
And that's not in the upper domain.
No, that's above the upper domain.
Gotcha.
Right, the soul and, you know, and that self are totally outside of the hourglass we're talking about. Right, that's above it. You know, and that mindful self can see spirit substance. Mm-hmm. That mindful self, the spirit ministry of the Holy Spirit, the spirit ministry of the Spirit of Truth, you know, or the adjuster as a spirit fragment, all three of those facts can relate directly to that Marantia mindful self, right? That potentially eternal you self, but not you, not the agita one that you're thinking with right now. All you get is some shadowy, downstepped, representation. It's difficult enough to just transfer it horizontally and represent it in the mindful self of that Marantia self, but to have to transfer it down as well into your mind, it's going to be a very shadowy, tenuous representation, subject to all of your ignorance and confusion and stuff and distortion.
Solitary confinement.
Well, the fact that we get so little so far as direct rapport with our gestures, to me, says our soul's got to be pretty minuscule.
And now the way it works is because the soul can have this more direct interaction, when you're getting up to, say, first circular, and so your agitant mind is a lot like that soul's mind, you can begin to benefit. What it has access to directly, it can feed indirectly into you. And up in the gesture papers, they refer to that. When you get advanced like that, you can actually start to benefit from things being sort of pre-worked for you by your Marantia mindful self. Instead of just the adjuster trying to help with the forms in your mind, your Marantia self can start to help too. Improving the representations in your agitant mind and the sort of the reality of your experiences, getting them more solidified. Yeah.
But as a sixth circular.
Right. Right. I mean, again, remember, if it wasn't for the Spirit of Truth, right, you wouldn't have any ability to have any relationship with an adjuster. Right. Normally, it's only when you're a third circular mind that there's any sort of ability for that adjuster to transfer some representation into that mind. Right. A less than third circular, in and of ourselves, have no ability to hold any representation from an adjuster. And it's too less, it's any more than, like I said, a dog could hold a representation of an adjuster in its mind. Any sort of, influence from the adjuster in its mind.
And the Spirit of Truth.
The Spirit of Truth gives a quality to your mind that it doesn't have innately. It allows your mind to hold some sort of a primitive representation of the influence from the adjuster.
That's why they flock here.
Right, and so that's why they can come, right? Because they can give you something, right? But normally you'd have to be a third circular before they could give you anything. Okay? Your mind couldn't hold anything from them before, when it's such low quality, when it's pre-third circular. Just very low quality mind, pre-third circular. Or flip it around and remind you what high quality an adjuster is, right? I mean, you're trying to represent something that's pretty darn high quality, okay? a little more difficult than representing that cup in my mind, okay?
Start with the cup.
And if you have a hard time representing cups in your mind, you got a ways to go before you're actually in tune with your adjuster. So let's get to the details here. All right, so in this second paragraph, it says, mind is the functional endowment of the infinite spirit. Okay, that's what I was just referring to a little bit ago. The literal mind energy, the potential for mind energy, the reservoir of the potential for mind energy is the universal absolute. mind energy itself is coming out of that reservoir. See, but the functional endowment, right, like I said, the infinite mother spirit is the infinite mind. And that's a reservoir of mind activity that can be bestowed on you. Right? This functional endowment, see? So that's what they're referring to there, is mind activity. That's a functional endowment of the infinite spirit, i.e. the infinite mind of the infinite mother spirit. And then it goes on here. So the again, leveraging off of the three of the seven absolutes. So the primal thought of the Universal Father eternalizes in dual expression. Again, playing off the thought, word, action thing. The Isle of Paradise and his deity equal, spiritual eternal son. And then just reminding you in that seven absolutes of infinity picture that once you have that duality, right, that makes the super additive consequence inevitable. Right? Such duality of eternal reality renders the mind God, the infinite spirit, inevitable. And you know, when they say the mind God, like I said, most immediately in the seven absolute sense, you would be thinking about the absolute mind, the conjoined actor. So an absolute fact. But there's a super absolute fact that they keep referring to here too, the infinite mind. Right? Of the infinite mother spirit. That's why they keep saying infinite spirit instead of conjoined actor, because they want to be indirectly referring to the super absolute. You see how they said there. Where was that? Right in that first sentence of that second paragraph. Therefore, infinite. See, in potential. Okay. Because they're wanting to bring in that bigger picture. They're wanting to bring in coordination. So they want to bring in Mother, which comes from Paradise Trinity. That indispensable channel of communication between the spiritual and the material. Like I was saying, the only way spirit and matter can directly meet, quote unquote, is within the mind, within the context of mind. As two substances, they're absolutely separate. Because there's an absolute of matter and there's an absolute of spirit. They're absolutely separated. So for them to be in communication, right, to exist in some commonality, it's got to be within mind. That's only where the commonality exists. In and of themselves, they have no commonality. There's no overlap between the two substances. There's no commonality. So there's no communication, right?
So that's why when they say earlier in the book that, you know, the room that I'm in, I can't perceive, but it's being told, what described to me, they're explaining it in the mind. But they can't.
Right, and again,
spirit guy can't see the
See, if you're a very high spirit being, like a solitary messenger, you don't have a mind that can represent matter within it. See?
But yeah. They can explain it to you, and your mind then can do something.
Right. I mean, someone who can see it,
like a mighty
mind, right, can help to transfer a mind form into another mind form. Right. See? You know, so I can try to give you a way of forming a mind representation of your own, leveraging off of my mind representation. Right? But see that whole bit of if a being can't see matter, it's not because it's not there to be seen. It's just their mind can't represent. They have such a unity-like mind, it can't represent such coarse individuality. Just like you have such an individuality-like mind, you can't represent such pure unity. You know, it doesn't. There's no way to have that kind of a form in your mind energy system. Remember, they call you. They say you have a material mind. That means that you have a very individuality-like mind. Doesn't mean you have a mind made out of matter, right? You have a mind made out of mind energy, of course, right? But it's mind energy that's really close to the matter end of the spectrum, right? And it just won't hold very pure unity sorts of forms in it. There's no way to represent such, you know, unity likeness within such a mind. Yep.
Coming up, I was asking about individuality, associativity, and unity, and I was beginning to explain how it works in the adjutants. And so when I got to unity, I found myself at a loss for words. I couldn't come up with a way to express what it means.
The basic way, you know, when you start to get technical, philosophic about those things, like we do in Total Deity Seminar, unity, direct fact, is continuumness. Right now, your mind cannot hold a representation of very definitive continuumness. It's too broken a medium to hold a representation of very pure continuumness. All you can get is a quasi-continuumness, right? Pieces that are close enough together that if you kind of step back and squint, it all kind of blurs together into a continuumness. But it isn't really continuum, right? Like, right? And see, in the same way with that very high mind that can't represent an individuality, I mean, they have such a continuumness like mind energy system that there's no way to individuate it enough to really represent the definitive individuality of matter in such a mind.
Q is a continuum.
Right, right, right. When you think about, you know, like the Q continuum, I mean, they're thinking about something that is, you know, is... Yeah, it's like thinking about, you know, it's like the Revelators not being able to figure out how you're supposed to think about the so-called beings on the Eternal Sun's worlds. It's like, well, if it's pure unity and no individuality, how can there be a being? right, you've got some sort of like continuum then, don't you? I mean, right? You got something too?
Well, so how does... Marantia substance work? I mean, there you have, I don't know, I can't get my head around it.
Well, I mean, that's why they speak of it, see, as a weave.
Yeah, but I mean, they're in relationship with each other.
Yes, they are.
And without mind, I mean, but...
Right, but...
It has to be mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, but... But see, the, you know, remember how they kind of, you know, describe it as the master physical controllers kind of take a can opener to matter, sort of pry it open a little bit, quote unquote, and then you can thread spirit substance into it. But it's not like you're blending the two together. You're just juxtaposing them. There's a clever way you can kind of lock them together, but they aren't really... You know,
I mean, they're still existing independently of each other.
Yeah, yeah. You zoom in with a microscope, and it's like, okay, there's a physical fiber, and there's a spirit fiber. You know, you don't have any fibers that are kind of 50-50 or anything.
And but nothing can touch each other. I mean, there's no way for the links. You know, it's not like Velcro. There's no hooks and loops. Right?
Well, again, the basic answer to your question is like, well, why is that even possible to kind of like thread them together? Well, they were just referring to that in the previous section, right? Remember, if you go all the way back to the roots of spirit substance and the roots of matter, even before you get to the potentials, you've got pure energy and pure spirit. And those, if I take all the father fragments, pure spirit, and I turn them around, I have primordial force. And it's not two sides of one thing, they're the same thing. I see the two are together as one fact there. See, so, you know, that's what they're reminding you. The potential for something to be harmonized is inherent in that first source and center when you think about it, you know, in the individuality viewpoint. So even though you don't understand the physics of it, coincidentally, see, there's going to be a way where you can very cleverly weave the two together and they stay together. Right, Right, that mirage of substance. Now, the way you can actually get past this, remember this separateness that we're talking about between matter and spirit is a finite separation.
Yeah.
And from an absentite perspective, you can blend the two together. You can homogenize them.
Yeah.
Right, and that, remember, all being, you know, there aren't, you know, except for on that eternal sun's world, all beings, if they're called spirit beings, they aren't literally pure spirit beings. There's some physical energy and some spirit energy blended homogeneously together in there. It's like, well, how can that be? If they're a finite being, that represents an absentite transcendent blending of those two separate facts. Yeah, remember, this cup just appears to be purely finite. But it continuously has roots in the absentite and then all the way to the absolute. It's not purely finite. Nothing is. Right? So the physical energy, so it's another way to think about it. The physical energy and the spirit energy fibers that you're weaving together both have roots in the absentite, and hence they have an ability to be together. But see, you're not literally blending them together, though. You're just sort of, sort of just leveraging off of that deeply rooted potential for them to be together. See, but that way of thinking about it, see, is taking instead of like they're doing here of trying to get you to leverage off the Father's example to have a way to understand it. So you can just set the Father aside and just work within all the triodities. Because, there's two triodities of the finite where matter, mind, and spirit are definitively separate. But there's 18 other triodities, absentite triodities, right, that represent them together in various ways. Right. Anyway, we're going pretty far afield. Let's get back. Now, before we go...
We got a good question over here.
Is there a question?
A quick question. Okay. Winston would like a reminder of what the spirit of truth is.
Okay, so the spirit of truth is a spirit ministry. It actually comes up in the next section, so I'm not going to go into it too deeply, but it's directly a spirit ministry. It's not a mind ministry. It's a ministry within spirit substance that's influencing your mind. And like I said, why don't we wait to the next section to really kind of speak of that more directly. Okay, so back on this paragraph, so we've touched on all the specific elements in that second paragraph, but at this point I want to remind you of another place in the book that's really speaking to these same issues that they're doing in this section here. Up in paper 102, I'll tell you in a second, paper 102, section 2, it's a fairly long section. It's on single column page 1120. You don't have to necessarily turn there. I'm just going to read a couple things out of there. But there's one spot in the book where they say point blank, mind is unity. Like the title of this section, Intellectual Unity. And it's up there in paper 102. I don't know what paragraph is that in that section. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth paragraph in that section. Right in the middle, you'll see mind is unity. And then towards the end of it, you'll see only in the harmony of the triunity of functional reality is there unity. That's one of the spots where they very directly speak to the fact that when you say, like on the chart here, threefold actuality with unity, the kind of unity that you mean there is tri-unity. And see, and they did it exactly here. When that sentence or that phrase ends, is there unity? See, the word unity is like the unity word in the chart there. Technically, it's tri-unity. Only in the harmony of the tri-unity of functional reality is there unity. Right? It's Within the context of mind, you can have this triunity of the three. Okay? And that's that coordination, that harmony. And again, I remind you, where does mind come from? The mother. And where does mother come from? The Paradise Trinity. Okay. This, and think about the Paradise Trinity relative to the three persons. That's the fact differentiated into three persons. That's the undivided deity, right? It's that fact that's the source for this bringing together, and that's why the Paradise deities or the Paradise Trinity is the only facet of deity that directly engages reality as a triunity. I mean, the Eternal Son engages spirit substance, right? For instance, but only the Paradise Trinity engages the triunity, right? And it's because of its likeness to that fact. Yep.
Now, I know I should know this, the total deity. Mm-hmm. But then the Trinity is prior to the three persons?
Right. When you think in a top-down way, if you don't think in the bottom-up individuality viewpoint, where you think of three persons and then a super summative consequence of the Paradise Trinity, but you think about it in a more appropriate way, right, you start at the top down and you have everything all together, and there's three elements that can be separated out, individuated, and you do that, and what's left, and is the Paradise Trinity, the divided deity, the indivisible deity.
So it's the chicken and the egg.
And that's the truer viewpoint. Okay. All right. So if you look at that whole paragraph that I was referring to up there in paper 102, you'll see a lot of parallels to what they're talking about here in this section. And I was just reading you those two little bits to see how it's resonant with what we're talking about here. Okay. So see, this is the key that they're trying to get us to really recognize that. If we're talking about universal unity, where you want to ultimately go to find this is in the mind and the philosophy in that mind. Philosophy is a quest for universal unity, as they say in the book many times. Not science, not religion. Right? And that's appropriate because that's the only place that you can find it is in the mind. Right? You're not going to find it in spirit substance. You're not going to find it in matter. So you don't find it merely as a religious engagement to spirit substance or a scientific engagement to matter. Right? It's only in the wholeness of personalized mind that you're going to find this. So that whole bit about consecrating your mind to the universal harmony, see, is consecrating yourself to eventually have a mind that can represent triunity, harmony, ever more and more and more. Just like consecrating your will is trying to get that more and more perfect synchronization in that way. It's important, like they said up in the previous section, that eventually, once you are aware that you've been initiated by the Father to move away from the Father to the domain of mind, where your destiny actually is. As you can tell, when you become a finaliter, you consecrate yourself, right, to the Paradise Trinity. You take this oath, right, to the Paradise Trinity. That source of mother, that's the source of mind. Right? Because you're a mindful self, and that's what you're trying to improve, ultimately. Okay, One more little paragraph they throw in this section.
This infinite and universal mind is ministered in the universes of time and space as the cosmic mind. And though extending from the primitive ministry of the adjutant spirits up to the magnificent mind of the chief executive of a universe, even this cosmic mind is adequately unified in the supervision of the seven master spirits, who are in turn coordinated with the supreme mind of time and space and perfectly correlated with the all-embracing mind of the infinite spirit.
Okay, so you're kind of, you know, giving you this full vertical and horizontal picture of mind like we were a little bit ago. But you know, notice, you know, one of the important things here. You know, a lot of times when you, when the expression cosmic mind is tossed out, you just think, well, that's the mind when I get out of the local universe. And that's, you know, that's a pretty limited way to think about it. I mean, technically, all mind out here is the cosmic mind. Okay? The cosmic mind in the local universe, I mean, the mind in the local universe is the cosmic mind. Like they're just saying here, right? It's ministered in the universes of time and space as the cosmic mind, and though extending from the primitive ministry of the adjutant spirits up to the magnificent mind of the chief executive of a universe. So in other words, whether or not you're talking about the mindedness, right, of an amoeba, or you're talking about the mindedness of the bright morning star, you know, the highest creature in a local universe. So from the highest creature to the lowest creature, it's all cosmic mind. You know, and again, it reminds you of something that came up, you know, in recent sessions of, you know, don't think of adjutant mind as something that's perforce confined to the lowly dregs of reality. Right? It's part of the cosmic mind. It fundamentally doesn't have any ceiling. Right? The ceiling, it appears to have a ceiling, but that's not a ceiling in the mind. That's a ceiling in the creature that mind is identified to. An amoeba has a definite ceiling. Right? And so do we to begin with. But unlike an amoeba, we can work on, you know, elevating our ceiling.
As we ascend and come into contact with higher mind, when we become a spirit,
mm-hmm. Right? We're a first stage spirit, yeah.
We still have a relationship to material things.
Yep.
That only way that could be is through mind. We right. must still have a relationship to adjutant mind as a spirit being.
Right. See. Yeah.
Have to,
right. For those of you in the webinar, he's just recognized, like, wow, when I become a first stage spirit, and I know I still have a relationship to matter, that must be through mind. Well, that's the only way you have a relationship to matter right now. Right. Again, like I was trying to say up front, you know, nothing changes. You will always only have a relationship to the two substances, matter or spirit, in the context of mind, through mind. You don't have any direct access. You know, and you know, like I've said many times, you know, we figured out a long time ago this, you know, this fact in regard to matter, that we were only dealing with a representation of matter in our mind, that we weren't directly, you know, feeling it, like I said. The thing that we haven't done is, you know, primarily because we haven't thought of spirit as a substance in the external world. But the same is true there. You don't have some mystical faculty that allows you to have direct access to spirit substance, like humans have always believed. Right? There is no such mystical faculty. Right? Spirits, the only access to spirit you have is the representation of it in mind. You don't have any direct access to it. You don't have any direct access to the Universal Father. All you have access to is whatever influence of the Universal Father can be represented in your mind. And if you haven't taken delight in cultivating being a mind that can represent the Father well, you're going to have a very poor experience with the Father. See, but humans have never believed that. It's like, no, 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 no. No, I don't. It's not like that. I have a mystical ability to transcend all growth limitations. I'm a child of God, except when I don't want to be a child of God, and then I'm innately divine and have a perfect, infinite relationship to the Spirit Father. No, you don't. Okay, right? To believe that you have that is—I mean—that's the delusion that takes you down the Lucifer rebellion. Right? You don't. All you have access to is what your little animal origin mind can hold. I mean, how decent a representation of an infinite fact do you think your little animal origin adjutant mind can hold right now? How high a notion of yourself do you have? Do you think you've got the full representation of the Father right now already and there's nothing left to do? Yeah, it sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud, but just think about it. People believe that unwittingly all the time. Always have.
You're supposed to laugh.
It's like, no, you're a child of God, right? By nature. I mean, there's a reason why throughout all of the epical revelations of human history, no revelator has tried to teach us better ideas of God until the fifth epical revelation. Especially with the spiritual uplift, Jesus knew he could encourage a better recognition of the ideal of God. But he told him, forget about the idea of God thing. Because why? Because their minds are too primitive to represent any decent idea of God. Right? They've given this because not only do we need to get a better representation of the idea of God, we need to take delight in cultivating, having a mind, and we can if we will now. We can consecrate our mind to be a mind that can actually hold a decent idea of God, a representation that doesn't make celestials ill. Remember what they say about our representations of God. They find them sickening and grotesque, the way we represent the Father in our mind. Because they can look at your picture, and they're going, that is gross, guys. Right.
But even after you read this, and you really contemplate that, it's so beyond the ability. You get lost in the contemplation of at our level.
Totally.
It becomes so awesome that you just, it's unfathomable.
In terms of
when you put it all together.
Sure, the physics of it is completely unfathomable.
And even the love of it, just like.
But the beautiful thing is, if you just...
It's so cool.
It is. It's very cool what we have by grace. And just to know, I don't have to know any of the physics that I'm alluding to. I mean, if I just take delight in cultivating, taking definitive relationship to what I can do, I can work on supplying the favorable conditions. I know that if I have a mind that is loyal, if I have a mind that is humble, if I have a mind that is sincere, if I have a mind that is just, if I have a mind that is patient, that is a mind that can hold a better representation of God in it. My relationship to the Father will be improved because I now can literally have a better relationship to the Father. Right? No amount of wishful thinking will give you a better relationship to the Father. You have to actually be able to possess such a relationship. And if you haven't supplied those favorable conditions, a mind that's not loyal cannot hold a representation of the Father. Matter of fact, they tell you, if you're definitively disloyal, that basically cuts you off completely from the Father. Right. That mind has severed all potential relationship to the Father. Right. When Kalagastya did that, right, that basically breaks it. I mean, that a mind like that can't even really have personality hardly identified with it anymore, let alone having a relationship to God or something. Right. That mind is severed. Its similarity to those higher facts. And so it'll all happen naturally. if you just do what you can do, you know, you can understand the physics of loyalty. Right? You can understand the physics of spirit representation and, you know, all this sort of stuff. Right? Exactly what love is as a physical fact in spirit energy and stuff like this, right? But you can work on, you know, just knowing that if you do those things that you can do, the mind will naturally be grown into a form that can have a greater relationship with greater things, like adjusters and the Father. Yeah, and that's good news. Okay. All right, so back here, let's get the details. Three paragraphs with lots of tangents. So first they give you that fact that the cosmic mind, okay, is the full vertical, not just a high level in the horizontal, you know, hierarchy. And then they throw in, even with it having that much verticality, you know, going all the way down to like a first agent engaging an amoeba and stuff, even this cosmic mind, even with that, you know, seeming lowliness that it goes all the way that far down, is adequately unified in the supervision of the seven master spirits. And well, like good enough for government work adequately? What do they mean by adequately? I mean, I'd like it to be better and adequate. This is where, you know, again, you need to reflect on the true meaning of the word adequate. The revelators like to use that word in its literal sense. You know, the AD prefix is Latin for to, T-O. And the root there is equity. Right, I mean, fundamentally, it means that it's unified. See, when they say it's adequately unified, it's brought together as a system, not in some simple equality way, where everything is equal, so it automatically is all together as one, but it's brought together in the context of equity. That cosmic way. You know, equity is about cosmic, equal is about spiritual. Equality is about spiritual. So that's what they mean there. Even this cosmic mind, is in relationship to equity, is unified in the supervision of the seven master spirits. Be kind of a way to expand that out. You know, in relationship to equity, is unified. Now, technically, what they mean there, the supervision of the seven master spirits, is, you notice how they kind of limited you to the local universe there. You know, with the bright morning star being the top in their hierarchy there. Well, if you go above that, right, you've got the mind womb of reflective mother spirits, and then there's, you know, the higher mind womb above that, of the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days, like we've talked about many times here recently. But all of that is in the context of the seven master spirits individually and collectively, a spirit presence individually and collectively of the seven master spirits. That's what they're referring to. Who are in turn coordinated with the supreme mind. Right? So you have the universal mother within the finite, obviously directly related transcendently to the supreme being, who's the supreme mind. Just like the conjoint actor is the absolute mind, capital A, capital M, the supreme being is the supreme mind, capital S, capital M. Okay. See, just notice the coordinated. See, they're referring to the mother there. And then, of course, also, you know, you can go up existentially to the absolute mind and the infinite mind. Okay. But the whole point of all that is just, again, to appreciate that the ubiquitous fact, high and low, far and wide, within which whatever diversity you want to imagine, be it the difference between an amoeba and Gabriel or whatever, matter, spirit, whatever the diversity, high, low, whatever, it all has a place to come together in the unity of mind. Mind is unity. Mind is the fact in which this all can come together. If you want to just think abstractly, you know, why don't I have a consciousness in matter or a consciousness in spirit? Why is my consciousness in mind energy? Because that's the place where it can all come together. Like I've said so many times, you can, when you discover your initial relationship to the spiritual father, you can easily get biased to that and never really get around to mind. But remember, that spirit connection to the father is meant to just initiate your relationship to mind. Right? You got your matter by nature, you initiate your relationship to spirit. Now you really initiate your relationship to your mind in a new, genuine way, like you never were related to it before. Yeah, you can begin the process of finding the destiny of harmony that you exist to find. You had something?
Our potential for unity is in mind.
Yeah, just remembering that unity, see, is a tri-unity. It starts as a tri-unity, you think about a tri-unity, but if you think about encompassing it with personality, then it's the three together as one. It's like a unity in that sense. See, and that's why that's why I would use unity here, right, on the chart, rather than just saying tri-unity, because I have four blocks. You know, I don't just have matter, mind, and spirit. I've got a personality block on the chart. And so I got the threefold actuality, but then I'm thinking of encompassing it. Yeah, and that's why they said it the way they did up there. Like I said, only in the harmony of the tri-unity of functional reality is there unity. See why they said both tri-unity and unity? See, that functional reality encompassing it with personality. Okay. All right, so we want to do the spiritual unification here too. Okay. So let's get into that.
Three, spiritual unification. As the universal mind gravity is centered in the paradise personal presence of the infinite spirit, so does the universal spirit gravity center in the paradise personal presence of the eternal Son. The universal Father is one, but to time-space, he is revealed in the dual phenomenon of pure energy and pure spirit.
Okay, so back reminding you of that, like we did so much in section one. But just make sure you're thinking about it. When they say the paradise personal presence of the infinite spirit, if you weren't trying to motivate towards the infinite mother spirit like they're doing here, remember, if you're thinking about the creator side of the third source and center, that's the conjoined actor, the personal side. If you're thinking about the controller side, the impersonal side, that's the infinite spirit. You use that duality of the conjoined actor for personal, the infinite spirit for impersonal. If you're just thinking about sort of the two sides of that that third source and center in the context of the seven absolutes. And, so technically the personal presence of the infinite spirit is the conjoint actor. Right? You know, directly, there is no personal presence. The infinite spirit is impersonal. You know, that's why when you downstep it as a creative spirit, that's not a personal fact. It isn't personal until it's a creative mother spirit. You're not downstepping the conjoined actor. Right? You're downstepping the infinite spirit to a creative spirit. And that's why it's impersonal. It's only when you add mother deity to it as a creative mother spirit that is personal. Right, so just, they're obviously talking about the seven absolutes. So they say personal presence of the infinite spirit, i.e. the conjoined actor, the absolute mind, right? Because they're also talking about the absolute spirit, right? The spirit gravity center, paradise personal presence of the eternal sun, that's the absolute spirit. But they don't just want to talk about the seven absolutes. You can just see how they don't just want to talk about it by the fact that they didn't say centered in the paradise personal presence of the conjoined actor. They're just trying to leverage off of the seven absolutes. They want you to think about the bigger picture, like we keep emphasizing. But they again bring up that idea of you have this potentiality of harmony in the first source and center that you can appreciate by thinking of how pure energy and pure spirit are one fact, a difference in name only. Okay, and then what do they say?
Paradise spirit realities are likewise one. But in all time-space situations and relations, this single spirit is revealed in the dual phenomenon of the spirit personalities and emanations of the eternal sun and the spirit personalities and influences of the infinite spirit and associated creations. And there is yet a third, pure spirit fragmentations, the Father's bestowal of the thought adjusters and other spirit entities which are pre-personal.
Okay, so what they want to get at is, you can see why they sort of primed the pump again on the seven absolutes there in that first paragraph. They want you to get, starting to think about the diversity of spiritual influence. Okay? And remember how in the previous section there, you had, where's that statement about, in that first paragraph where they said, by whose spirit responsive ministry of mind? They're reminding you of how mind is responsive to an influence from spirit energy. Now we're speaking to that influence, that spiritual influence. That it's that spirit substance, that unity substance. I mean, its influence is a unifying influence on the mind. Hence the title, spiritual unification. That's what primes the pump and allows spirit to consequently be, I mean, allows mind consequently, excuse me, mind consequently to properly be described as mind is unity. Right? Where does the potential for that actuality of unity in the mind come from? It comes from spirit. So spiritual unification, you're thinking about, how can I get my mind less fragmented, fractured, like it is by nature, because it's a material mind. I need to have more spirit influencing it. I need spiritualized mind. I need more unified mind. Right? That upper domain of the hourglass is the spiritualized mind, because spirit energy is directly, engaging the top of the hourglass. Right? So that unity energy is influencing the mind up there, and there's a unification of your mind up there because of that spirit influence. And so we're thinking about that. You're thinking about how it is that mind comes to be something that embodies unity. Where did that potential come from? How did that process get initiated? Okay? And they're just reminding you that it's not a simple thing. There's all kinds of flavors of spirit influence. There's some that come from the third person. There's some that come from the second person. There's even some, like they remind you, that come from the first person. There's lots of influences out there. Spirit may be the substance that embodies unity, but it's divisible. There's individuations of spirit unity. Remember how unity is continuumness. Continuumness is not indivisible. It's divisible. And they're reminding you how it is divided into all these different, you know, separate influences. Indivisibility is not unity. Indivisibility is oneness. You know, they'll get to that later on here. But unity is divisible. Continuumness is divisible. And they're reminding you of just how much it is separated, you know, into separate influences. So you're in the midst of all kinds of spiritual influence coming from lots of different directions, if you will, but all motivating, or I should say motivating, all influencing the mind towards the same end, a unification. Remember how they talk about all those different spirit influences, but when all is said and done, you know, it's like there's just one. Right?
They innately work together.
Right, they innately work together. Right. But at some point, it's important to recognize that it isn't just one influence. There's this whole complex, you know, set of influence imposed on you. And they're all seemingly magically coordinated as if they were one. See, again, what supplies that coordination of all this diversity of spirit influences? The mother. Right? You know, just like we were saying how the three can come together in mind, that, you know, mind comes from the mother, that mother deity, which is innately minded, is the context in which the coordination of whatever you're talking about can exist, like the coordination of all this diversity of spiritual influence. Okay, again, we're interested in universal coordination. And so one of the things that need to be coordinated is all this diversity of spiritual influence coming from the three persons. Again, it's always, the answer is always mother deity, see, is the means for that coordination. Okay, but that's not, see, immediately being brought out, that they want you to reflect on that. Okay, what else do they say here?
No matter on what level of universe activities you may encounter spiritual phenomena or contact with spirit beings, you may know that they are all derived from the God who is Spirit by the ministry of the Spirit Son and the Infinite Mind Spirit. And this far-flung spirit functions as a phenomenon on the evolutionary worlds of time, as it is directed from the headquarters of the local universes. From these capitals of the Creator Sons come the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth, together with the ministry of the Adjutant Mind Spirits to the lower and evolving levels of material minds.
Okay. All right, so a couple things in there. So, no matter on what level of universe activities you may encounter spiritual phenomena, you've got all that diversity they just mentioned in the previous paragraph. There's this inherent coordination of it all, and notice what they did. Now, all up to this point, they've been just saying the Infinite Spirit. Occasionally, you might wonder, well, why didn't they say the conjoint actor there? They seem to be really kind of directly referring. Why are they saying Infinite Spirit? See, here they're taking it one little notch further. They didn't say Infinite Mother Spirit. What did they say? Infinite Mind Spirit.
Same difference.
Right? Remember, mother doesn't get directly talked about until up in paper 117. they're hinting at it. See, again, I told you that, you know, fundamentally what they're wanting you to have in mind, pardon the pun, is the infinite mother spirit as the infinite mind. that highest expression of coordination. Okay. All right, and then they but again, you know, the section is not the previous one. This is about spiritual unification. So fundamentally, they're wanting you to think about how, like in the local universe, you don't just have a mind presence from the creative mother spirit. You also have a spirit presence, a spirit energy presence from the creative mother spirit. And if you want to be kind of precise, that's a little bit more the creative spirit part of the creative mother spirit that is sort of directly giving you that spirit energy presence in the local universe. See, and it's in that context. So they say, and this far-flung spirit functions as a phenomenon on the evolutionary worlds of time as it is directed from the headquarters of the local universes. From these capitals of the Creator's sons come the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth. Winston's question earlier, I see. So you have this literal spirit energy that's ubiquitously present all through our local universe. It's the presence of her spirit, substance, nature. And on that, or in that medium, or on that substrate, whichever way you want to think about it, there are modulations, there are ministries, there are personal spiritual ministries that are modulated upon that, that are delivered through that medium of that spirit energy. There's the Creative Mother Spirit's personal spiritual ministry in that medium, the Holy Spirit. And then there is the Creator's Son's personal spiritual ministry in that medium, the Spirit of Truth. You know, technically the Master's Son's, right? Personal spiritual ministry. The Creator's Son doesn't have a ubiquitous spirit energy presence. He can't deliver that personal ministry to you himself. He has to take a hold of her spirit energy and jiggle it, if you will, modify it, right? Send a signal through that spirit energy, through that medium, to you. Right? She's ubiquitous. He can, when he pours that ministry onto her, it gets poured upon all flesh. Right, you know, his spirit, substance, nature is all localized at some X, you know, wherever he's standing. Right, it's not everywhere. Right, he's not upon all flesh, but she is. Right? So, he just, and it's like, ooh, that sounds kind of intimate for him to just grab a hold of her spirit energy and do what he wants with it. Yeah, remember he had to go through 7 bestowals and make himself the type of a mind that when it grabbed a hold of her like that, didn't do something improper. Right? This whole bit about, we're talking about, you know, you taking delight in cultivating, having a mind that could represent something. I mean, he had to do the same thing. He had to become a nature that when it grabbed a hold of her and put this modulation out into her spirit substance, that it was appropriate, that it takes into consideration supremacy. You know, not just, you know, some localized desire, but took in the context the whole. He had to literally get supreme deity into his nature, so that when he grabs a hold of that, he jiggles it in a way that's appropriate here, there, everywhere, now and for all finite time. He has to have that objectivity. Right? And she doesn't let him do that until he's, you know, it's not a matter of sort of passing a test until he literally has the ability to do it properly. Until he's a master son, he can't properly, you know, modulate that medium. He has to get that nature that can do it properly.
Is that why the spirit of truth changes after a creator son becomes a master son, even though he's been bestowed by, you know, other magisterial sons and.
Well, and again, see now, once it's in her nature, she's also a mother deity, and mother deity has the ability to focalize. So, you know, for instance, right now, I'll get to your question in just one second. But right now, you know, like when he, you know, we talk about him pouring out his spirit of truth upon all of Urantia. I mean, he's pouring it out everywhere in the local universe, actually. But she's only focalizing it down to our world. She's not focalizing it down to the neighboring planet. Okay. Now, what about those worlds that have had a bestowal son who was a magisterial son and got a spirit of truth? Right. See, she had a spiritual ministry relative to that magisterial son's bestowal that was focalized down onto that world. And when he pours this out upon the whole substrate, she can then augment what she's focalized down onto that world that's had a bestowal son, give that focalization an upgrade. Now, she's got access to everything. You know, she could focalize that spirit of truth from another world with a magisterial son onto ours, but she doesn't. The universe is mind-made and personality-managed. She has to personally manage this whole thing about what gets delivered where and how. And she's doing the same thing with Adjutant Mind. You notice the other thing they threw in there, together with the ministry of the Adjutant Mind Spirits, and they purposely said Mind Spirits to remind you that when you're doing top-down, it starts with spirit and goes down to mind. Right? The root word is spirit. Right? And it's a top-down point of view. And so you start with that spirit energy, and you're extending down from it to in mind energy. But it's just reminding you, if you go all the way up that mind energy, you are merging into that spirit energy where the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth spiritual ministries are directly. Okay.
So you could never have diversity of ministry if it weren't divisible.
Right, you've got the divisibility of spiritual unity on the one hand, and then you also have this precision of focalization that Mother Deity can do. You know, takes something that's sort of ubiquitous everywhere, but only focalizes it down. You know, I can think of a rubber sheet, you know, that's everywhere. You can grab a hold of it and pull it down and engage it. She has that Adjutant Mind ministry there's a common level filling the whole local universe, but she specializes it, focalizes it down to our world differently than she does to any other world. You know, initially you have a flavor for a given local system, and then you have a specialization to each world within that local system. See, so it's a hierarchical focalization. You know, she crudely focalizes it and then more precisely focalizes it down to a world. Because that mother deity has that vertical, you know, extent. Okay? Yeah.
Now, prior to Michael becoming a master son,
right.
That was the spirit of truth available on any planets prior to that?
I mean, worlds that have had a bestowal son get a spirit of truth.
Well, they do.
Right? Okay. Yeah, from that magisterial son that was the bestowal son.
It's just upgrade.
Right? It just gets this greater embodiment of the greater whole infused into it subsequent to him becoming a master son.
Okay. What were they getting before?
Something that's a little less holistic. But completely adequately holistic. I mean, it just reminds you, we don't need the measure of wholeness in the spirit of truth that we have. I mean, it goes way beyond anything we can remotely utilize right now. Right? Those other worlds, it's like, well, they got gypped, you know, they probably run into the ceiling of their spirit of truth, you know, they're wishing, man, I wish we got the better spirit of truth. No, they can't even reach the ceiling of it, you know. Right? So, I mean, again, it's a vast thing.
Right. The low bandwidth. Yeah, exactly.
But see, you know, you're basically potentializing the system.
Yeah.
Once you have the full spirit of truth from a master son in play, then the sky's the limit on that world, right? You know, you just raised the ceiling out of sight. So they can go on into seventh stage of light and life, whatever, and they're not going to bump into the ceiling. So, but anyway, the whole thing they're wanting you to be reminded of here, and the adjutant mind spirits do that very directly, is that whenever you're thinking about mind, it's predicated on spirit. Like if you're thinking about the mind of the reflective mother spirits in the seventh super universe, that's predicated on the spirit presence of the seventh master spirit. That mind extends down from spirit. And it's why within that mind, you could call the third adjutant, say, the spirit of courage. Right? The spirit isn't literally in the mind. You know, it isn't innately the spirit of courage. But if you start to use that adjutant mind to the point where you're tapping into its full depth all the way up to the spiritual ceiling, then you have access, see, effectively to spirit fully represented in mind. It isn't literally spirit, but it's spirit fully represented in mind.
Okay. Somehow the spirit of truth, you know, itself doesn't affect minds, you know, that don't have seven adjutant, you know, don't have a six and seven adjutant.
Right.
So, and also, it's not just on the world. I mean, I guess if somebody from this world went to Mars, the spirit of truth would go with them.
Yeah, there's two things I'm going to get to. Yeah, so let me do that second one first, because that was related to what Don was saying. I mean, again, because the spirit of truth is everywhere in the local universe, when I leave this world, no matter where I go in the local universe, I still have access to it. Not to mention, I can even go outside of the local universe, because not only is that ministry a modulation in this spirit energy of the local universe, but the spirit outside, remember, the reflective mother spirits can reflectively carry that spirit of truth outside of the local universe. So you have, you know, like they tell you, you have access to the spirit of truth even outside the local universe. Okay. But, okay, so there's that. And then what was the other thing? There was two things that you brought up there that...
Well, the second one was the Mars one, right? The first one was...
What was the first one?
Off thinking. It had to do with...
What was it?
Well, I was thinking of a person, you know, who... If you're from... My question was, if you're from a planet that doesn't have the spirit of truth, and you, when you get resurrected, you get the spirit of truth, I imagine, on the mansion rules, even though you didn't have it.
No.
You don't.
No. That's very important to remember that...
When do you get it, then? You must...
I mean... You know, yes, like if, like think of all the people that graduated from this planet before 2,000 years ago.
Correct.
Right? They're going through the whole local universe, they have no access to the spirit of truth because it's not there.
Seriously?
Now, if they happen to be still within the local universe 2,000 years ago, they would get access to the spirit of truth. You know, while they're, say, working at the constellation level or something. Right? But you don't have access to that until it's been poured out.
For example, who died before spirit of truth was bestowed, let's say.
Right.
He never got the spirit of truth.
Until Pentecost.
Oh, but then anybody in the...
Yeah, anyone from here gets it. You know, people that are graduating from the neighboring planet and are working through the mansion worlds right now, they don't have access to the spirit of truth.
That doesn't seem fair.
See, again, remember...
But maybe they don't need it? Or?
If everyone had access to it, you couldn't make the Supreme. The Supreme is not made out of only those that have access to the spirit of truth. It's made out of every variation you can think of. Right? The only way to get supremacy with all possible finite variations.
So it's not necessarily an advantage or a disadvantage.
You can get all the way to the Isle of Paradise without the Spirit of Truth. You see, the Spirit of Truth is just a catalyzer. I mean, fun memory is coming from a Creator Son. It's a way of making it so that the normal time it takes you to, you know, to advance to a certain degree, you can shorten that by the catalyzing aspect. Remember, Creator Son is not limited by time. You know, you see that very simply. I don't have to take all the time that it normally takes to go from seventh to third circular to get an adjuster. I can get one right away. Yeah. See, it's like you short-circuited that normal time it takes.
My mind used to be water, and now it's wine.
I mean, I don't need the Spirit of Truth to get to the Isle of Paradise. Because I have the Spirit of Truth, I should get there, you know, quicker. Right? I should be able to make progress more quickly if I take delight in cultivating, you know, having we'll a mind that can do something with it, right? Right? I mean, and again, right now, we barely use the Spirit of Truth as the Spirit of Truth, and we only really use it as the Spirit of Unification to get an adjuster. But, you know, if it wasn't sad to record, right? Right, people would be using the Spirit of Truth more as the Spirit of Truth, but because it's sad to record, most of us don't have a mind that has any resonance with truth right now. So what's the Spirit of Truth going to do for you? Right? Again, you have to be a mind that it can do that has some relationship to that ministry. Oh, I know what the other thing was about animals not having access to the Spirit of Truth. Right. So why is that? Again, okay, the hourglass analogy. An animal just has a lower domain of the hourglass.
Right. Anything below fifth adjutant mind.
Fifth or less, right. You know, the adjutants just in and of themselves are in the lower domain of the hourglass. The analogy. You know, you got the upper domain, and the Spirit of Truth is directly touching the top of the hourglass. The only way to have access to the Spirit of Truth is if you've got mind that goes up and actually is touching the top of that hourglass. If you're an animal and you don't even have an upper domain, there's this huge gap between your highest mind activity and the Spirit of Truth. It's way up there as a spirit ministry.
I got you. It's innate in the Spirit of Truth itself.
See, so
the Mother Spirit doesn't have to modify whether it goes to an animal or a human. Right. It's just innate.
It's just innate. Right, you know, the Spirit of Truth doesn't come down to anyone. Right, unlike an adjuster that actually can come down in your mind, at least the upper domain of the hourglass. Right, the Spirit of Truth and the Holy Spirit as spirit ministries can't come down at all. They're above. They're in spirit energy, which is above the mind energy in the hourglass. Right, right. Right, you're with those. They're not in you. Right, right. So that's the whole bit with an animal. It's got this huge gap. Its highest mind is way separated from spirit energy, but your highest mind, your spiritualized mind, right, goes all the way up until it's intimately in contact with spirit energy. It's the top of the hourglass, so you have access to those.
Interesting.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Did we get everything there? Yeah. We got that. Yeah. Let's go on to the next paragraph.
While mind is more unified on the level of the master spirits in association with the supreme being, and as the cosmic mind in subordination to the absolute mind, the spirit ministry to the evolving worlds is more directly unified in the personalities resident on the headquarters of the local universes, and in the persons of the presiding divine ministers, who are in turn well-nigh perfectly correlated with the paradise gravity circuit of the eternal sun, wherein occurs final unification of all time, space, spirit manifestations.
Okay, so we've already kind of talked about a lot of that. You can see the main thing they're throwing in there is that when they say that spirit ministry of the evolving worlds is more directly unified in the personalities resident on the headquarters. So in other words, you've got to get up, remember the three levels in the local universe, individuality, local system, associativity, constellation, unity, local universe headquarters. We're talking about this spiritual fact. So, if you're up there at the top, you're you're sort of directly at eye level with what we're talking about here. The unity of spirit ministry directly. So besides the personalities resident on the headquarters, see, and in the persons of the presiding divine ministers, right? So as creative mother spirits, right, as persons, like I was saying, I mean, they're the way that all of this is being coordinated within their local universe. And they are inherently top down, like they're describing there. They have a spirit hyphen mind presence, right? Mind is where the rubber meets the road, right? And spirit is on top of that. And so they're just reminding you that, again, see, when they say the persons of the presiding divine ministers, you're not just talking about creative spirit, you're talking about a creative mother spirit. Like I said, you're bringing in that fact that you have, there's mother deity that is transcendent of matter, mind, and spirit, and is the coordinate fact within which all of this complexity can be brought into this systematized association, this coordination.
So even though this may appear automatic, it's all volitional.
Right, and see, that's the other thing I was just going to remind you, because it's, the universe is mind made and personality managed. All of this stuff that sounds like you're just describing the physics of energies, none of it happens automatically. It's all, personality managed by the creative mother spirit. Right? She has a consciousness of all this detail and is personally willing all of its precision.
It's kind of unfathomable.
It's completely unfathomable. Yeah. Like I said, remember, you can go to the local universe headquarters and dial up, the quantity and quality of the first adjutant's use in some amoeba on some planet. Just thinking about that machine, is mind-boggling. But there's a being, right, the creative mother spirit, who has a consciousness of all that. And she has a consciousness of every amoeba, every single-celled organism, in the entire local universe, not to mention every mortal and everything else, right? All of that is in her mind, and she's personally coordinating it all actively every second, right? And it's even more than that. The more you get into the physics of all this, the more mind-boggling the fact of Mother Deity and its functioning gets. Right? The only way I can see that cup on that table is because Mother Deity is allowing me to see it. How does the representation get into my mind? Mother Deity puts, how does it get from my brain into my mind? Mother Deity crosses that divide.
You think there's a physics there?
Yes, there's a physics to all that. I mean, we get into the physics of that some in Reawakening Philosophy 1.
It's not a material physics.
It's a deity physics. Right? It's deity. Mother Deity is this distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other, like me in that cup, except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole, through the mother. Right? Mother Deity is what allows me to have experience. Mother Deity is the overarching fact of experiential deity. Without Mother Deity, there is no experience. Right? You just think how you take for granted what you're seeing in this room, and the fact that you can hear my voice. If she wasn't actively doing that, you wouldn't hear me or see me.
Does she say agencies that help her?
No.
She is the agency.
Right. She's not micromanaging it. She's ubiquitously managing it, right?
Yeah.
Right? She doesn't have a trillion fingers. Right? See, it's not, see, we automatically go to the father model,
yeah.
The individuality of the parts. No. No, it's the individuality of the whole. Okay. With no fingers, she touches everything intimately. Right? God as immanence, immanent with everything. Right? And the only means for any two things to be connected one to the other is through her. It's through Mother Deity. Okay. You know, and if it's, and eventually when you graduate from the local universe, it's not literally through your creative Mother Spirit, but it's still through Mother Deity. Yeah? That's the only way. The only way a divine counselor can talk to another divine counselor is because Mother Deity is linking the two together. It's the only way there's any connection between anything. Otherwise, everything would be an island universe. Right? Nothing would have any overlap, any commonality with anything else. How do 100 automatons come in together into a system? Not because they inherently have this ability. Right? Everything, right, is connected through Mother Deity. Okay.
Perfected creature existence can be attained, sustained, and eternalized by the fusion of self-conscious mind with a fragment of the pre-Trinity spirit endowment of some one of the persons of the Paradise Trinity. The mortal mind is the creation of the sons and daughters of the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit, and when fused with the thought adjuster from the Father, partakes of the threefold spirit endowment of the evolutionary realms. But these three spirit expressions become perfectly unified in the finaliters, even as they were in eternity so unified in the universal I Am, ere he ever became the universal Father of the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit.
Okay, the last part, again, you can just, you know, they're reminding you of, again, they're leveraging off of and they're bringing up that I Am, you know, relationship like they did at the end of of section one. So I don't know if we need to go into that too much again, but just, you know, remember that at the root of the Father, there is an I Am likeness. You know, remember the I Am is just a concept, right? But there's a likeness to that concept, that the totality of that concept of the I Am at the root of the Father. You know, and so whether or not you say, like they did, the first source and center, M dash the I Am, at the end of section one, or if you say Father hyphen I Am, or if you say the universal I Am, you know, anytime they're doing that, they're just reminding you that at the deepest root of the Father, and you can understand that the literalness of that when you go through the Total Deity Seminar, but at the root of the Father is this I Am likeness, where it's monothetic. Right, there's a one-doingness rather than a dithetic, you know, a two-fold doingness.
Perfect unifying the finaler, is that mortal finaler?
Yeah, right, see, so they're bringing in, see, and you notice they're bringing in all these, again, just these things that you know about how things are together. But, you know, the real zinger is at the beginning of the paragraph, where they're speaking more directly. You know, so this whole bit about a self-conscious mind, right? See, like I said, fundamentally, you're a mindal self with personality identified to that mindal self. You're a personalized mindal self. You're a self-conscious mind. But that mindal self eventually needs an eternal body, right? It needs spirit substance. I mean, in a simple way, that's why you have an adjuster, right? So eventually, you can have a body. That mindal self is fused to that spirit fragment, and that's your body. And when you leave as a first stage spirit, it's because, you know, you've got an adjuster for a body, basically.
Otherwise, okay? We'd stay in this whole
universe. Before that, you got a Marantia body, but once you can finally, you know, fully put your mindal self seated on that adjuster body, you know, then you can get rid of the scaffolding of the Maranja body. Okay.
Adjusters and bodies.
And I mean, you know, just, you know, that's a, you know, in just a simple substance sense, right, that's what the adjuster is for, so that you can have a body, you know, that is eternalized, as they say there in that first sentence. See? You can't eternalize a Maranja body or a material body.
You still have to inseraph them to get to.
And you still have to inseraph them.
Even though you're an adjuster body.
Right. And that's because you drug the adjuster down into the finite, remember, when you fused with it.
Okay. It didn't happen.
You clipped its wings,
yeah.
Right, when you fused with it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're a boat anchor that, you know, grabbed a hold of it and pulled it down into the finite. Okay, but the zinger is, so the fusion of the self-conscious mind with a fragment of the pre-Trinity spirit endowment of some one of the persons of the Paradise Trinity. Pre-Trinity spirit. Okay. Now, you know, we talk about pre-personal, we talk about adjusters. If you remember when they talk about spirit-fused mortals, they'll talk about pre-mind fragment. Okay. The most generalized way to talk about the pre-ness of any fragment, be it, you know, for a son fused or a spirit fused or a father fused, is what they do right here. They're all pre-Trinity, quote-unquote, spirit fragments. Okay, in the case of a spirit fused mortal, that spirit fragment, you know, that's a fragment of, you know, supposedly the creative mother spirit. Well, okay, technically, right, it's just a spirit fragment, so technically it's a fragment of the creative spirit. Okay, before the Trinity engages that fact and mother deity is associated with it, and there's then mind. I see, so you could say before there's mind, a pre-mind fragment, or you could say before the Trinity engages it, before there's mother deity, pre-Trinity. Okay, same way with a sun fused. Remember, that's a, you know, a little more complicated. You know, it's actually, you know, you think of it as a fragment of the reflective mother spirits. Okay, but it's a pre-Trinity fragment. See, so it's more technically a fragment of the reflective spirits, not the reflective mother spirits. Pre-Trinity, pre-mind, and they're reflective spirits. Remember, they reflect a particular creator sun into the nature of that fragment. You know, you aren't literally, you know, taking an axe to the creator sun and chopping off a spirit chunk, you know, and getting that, right? You know, it's a fragment of the reflective mother spirits, pre-Trinity, pre-mind, you know, that reflects a particular creator sun in a particular local universe, in that super universe. And then for a father fragment, an adjuster is a deity fragment of the facet of the Father that's called the Infinite Upholder. That facet of deity that's called the Infinite Upholder, that aspect of the Father, is fragmented into a deity fragment that's an adjuster. You're fragmenting that, that Infinite Upholder deity prior to it being engaged by the functioning of the Paradise Trinity. When you bring the Infinite Upholder and the functioning of the Paradise Trinity into relationship, you get Mother Deity. See, so prior to that relationship to the Trinity where you get Mother Deity, see, it's the same in all three.
Yeah.
You're taking a fragment before you bring in the Paradise Trinity and Mother Deity and mind. Okay. So that it's just a spirit fragment. Okay.
That's why it's pre.
And so all of them are pre-Trinity. See, and just think about, you know, like with the creative, before the creative mother spirit was the creative mother spirit, it was just a creative spirit and it wasn't personal. It was like a pre-personal expression. Mm-hmm. See, it's just like a pre-personal fragment that is a thought adjuster. Right. Okay. Okay, so that's, so that, see, this is the one spot where they speak in such generalized terms. And it just reminds you, you can see what they really want you to get at here is the Paradise Trinity and Mother Deity. you know, they're just like doing everything but, you know, spelling it out. And they practically did by calling it pre-Trinity Spirit. You know, try searching for that in other parts, you know, parts of the book. okay, so that's what they're getting at. But again, it's all, trying to leverage off. They just keep coming back, you know, to giving you these analogies with the seven absolutes, what you know about yourself as a finaliter, where you bring the three together, like they're talking about. They're just trying to give you all these different analogies, if you will, of how stuff can be brought together. But to appreciate fundamentally why that all happens is because of the Paradise Trinity and Mother Deity. This distinction is vital, is that passage. See, just over and over again. It's in relationship to the whole, in relation to the whole, the Paradise Trinity, and through the individuality of the whole, the Mother, that stuff comes together, especially together as one, you know, in a triunity sort of a way. It's only in the context of the Trinity and the Mother that that happens. That's what's between the lines of everything they're saying. So that you have that actuality of harmony, which is the Mother, and they don't speak directly of the actuality of harmony. They speak indirectly by pointing you to the potentiality of harmony, the first source and center. And that's how they're trying to get you to, you know, because they're not allowed to directly talk about the Mother. You're supposed to synthesize that recognition, discover that yourself. So they keep pointing to the potentiality of harmony and then getting you, it's like, well, if the first source and center is a potentiality of harmony, what's the actuality of harmony? The Mother. Yeah. All right, let's get the last bit here.
Spirit must always and ultimately become threefold in expression and Trinity unified in final realization. Spirit originates from one source through a threefold expression. And in finality, it must and does attain its full realization in that divine unification, which is experienced in finding God, oneness with divinity, in eternity, and by means of the ministry of the cosmic mind, of the infinite expression, of the eternal word, of the Father's universal thought.
So, you know, that whole bit about Father's universal thought and the will, he's not the way. Right? By means of the ministry of cosmic mind. Right? Who is the way? Right? The Mother. Okay? The way is, you know, of the infinite expression, of the eternal word, of the Father's universal thought. Yes, you can back it up. Right? To the will. But the will is not the way. The Father is the will. The Mother is the way. Okay. And in the Mother, there's mind. Like they said in section one, if you go apart from the Father, you go to mind. In other words, if you go apart from the Father, you go to the Mother.
The bosom of the Father.
Right. There's God as transcendence, the Father. If you go from the outside to the inside, God as immanence, you go from the Father to the Mother. Right? So they're trying to get you to discover both your parents, and the division of labor, right? The whole means to the Father is through the Mother. Like they're just saying there, by means of the ministry of cosmic mind, and the Father is not ministering cosmic mind, the Mother is. High and low.
He's busy not being God the Infinite.
Right. Right. Almost, see, you know, like I've said many times, once you fully encompass the fifth epical revelation, the Father goes from the false Father of God the Infinite, right, which is what most people believe in right now, to the actual God the Father. And the actual God the Father is the fact that has delegated everything possible. And all the stuff that's delegated is all the stuff you've ever thought of. The actual God the Father is what you haven't thought of yet. The idea of God is so transcendent of what anything you thought of. Most of, you know, when you think about God the Father, you're thinking, no, that's God the Son. You know, like we were talking about earlier, the spirit and the mind and stuff like that. It's like, no, you're thinking about God the Spirit, you know. No, you're thinking about God the Supreme. No, you're thinking about God the Sevenfold. I mean, the actual God the Father is what humans haven't thought of yet, you know. It's not all the low-hanging fruit that you think of first, all the stuff that's been delegated. It's the most transcendent, non-delegatable core.
That was the highest human concept.
Right, if when all is said and done, right? So you've got, again, another way to think about that, right? And to, you know, that, you know, like we said many times, you know, if you go to the Isle of Paradise, the Father is not the biggest circle on the Isle of Paradise. He's the smallest circle at the center. Right? Because he's delegated the rest of the Isle of Paradise. He's that tiny little circle in the center that's not delegatable. He's the smallest circle in existence, not the largest circle.
Maybe not that tiny.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, God is love, but not all love is God. In other words, in a Venn diagram, the circle of love is bigger than the circle of God. Right? He's the smallest circle. If you make him the biggest circle, you've got God the Infinite. The colossal error of pantheism, capital P pantheism. Right? There is no greater error that you can make than to believe that God the Father is God the Infinite. Because then you're not real.
It's a short circuit of the Infinite.
But you have to understand that. I mean, it's new.
Again. It's the fifth epic of Revelation. You know, it's revealing what we haven't thought about yet and trying to get us to be logical about our idea of God. Our current ideas of God are illogical because they're God the Infinite, and that's illogical. All right. Okay, so, wow, yeah, we a lot of stuff there. And obviously, you could talk, you know, on and on. I kind of skipped over some of the details there, but the whole point is just, you know, to get. They want you to, you know, in stepping through physical, intellectual, spiritual, and you know, we'll get to personality next. Talking about all the parts, but you just look at the way they talk about the parts, and it's like they're talking about the parts in a curious way. Why are they talking about the parts the way they are here? It's because they want you to leverage off of the parts and recognize the whole, right? The actual means for universal coordination. Parts aren't self-coordinating, even infinite parts, right? And to logically recognize what's missing in this picture, right? Lots of parts doing lots of magical coordination, it appears, but not really. Really, there's the Trinity and Mother. Okay. All right. Let's take a moment here.